sometimes when someone passes, suddenly you've got all these unresolved things with them, right? Through different stages of your life, when you're going through things, they hit you differently. For me, you know, I'm now like 5 years cancer-free. I went through breast cancer, and that was a real pivot for me in my grieving process with my mom. And I think it's because of the coming out of that and the appreciation. I had to do like a really deep dive into what I'm grateful for, and what I did get to experience with her was pretty amazing.
Hi, you're listening to Conversations with Musicians with Leah Roseman. And I'm sure you'll be moved by this week's episode with composer Carla Pattullo, speaking about processing grief that inspired her new album, Nomadica. In 2024, Carla won a Grammy Award for So She Howls for Best New Age, Ambient, or Chant Album. Carla spoke to me about her cancer journey, how this beautiful project, Nomadica, has helped her process the sudden death of her mother, and the inspiring collaborations with Martha Wainwright, the Scorcio Quartet, and Tonality. You'll also hear about her projects with her partner Elizabeth Beach, about the animation pioneer Lotta Reiniger, her longtime collaboration with Sandra Bernhardt, and how important mentors in the LGBTQ+ community, like Sandra and Laura Cartman, have helped Carla be comfortable with herself. You'll hear about Carla's close-knit Italian family and her early years as she developed her compositional voice and her career as a touring performer. Like all my episodes, you can watch the video or listen to the podcast. The transcript is linked in the show notes, along with several other episodes I think you'll love as well. All the clips from Nomadica are listed in the timestamps, and you can buy or stream the album from Carla's website, also linked.
Hey, Carla, thanks so much for joining me here today.
Thanks so much for having me, Leah.
So as people are listening to this, your new album, Nomadica, has just been out for a couple of days. And people are going to be able to hear some clips from that if they haven't heard it yet. And I'm going to encourage people to go right to your Bandcamp and buy the album. They love what they hear.
Thank you.
So it's a beautiful album. Thanks for sending me a preview copy. I've so enjoyed listening to it. And it's I know this is very personally meaningful. So do you want to get right into that?
Yeah. Like a year ago, I was coming up on the 20th anniversary of my mother's passing. She passed away in a car accident. And, grief is this like endless thing that you experience with losing someone so close to you. And certainly through the last 20 years have been going through the different stages of it, sometimes repeating the stages of grief over and over again, getting lost in a cycle of it. There was so much about my mom's passing that was just hard to accept. Also, there's a great amount of forgiveness that I've been trying to seek out of it. I think sometimes when someone passes, suddenly you've got all these unresolved things with them, right? And so sometimes it's just through different stages of your life, when you're going through things, they hit you differently. For me, you know, I'm now like 5 years cancer-free. I went through breast cancer, and that was a real pivot for me in my grieving process with my mom. And I think it's because of the coming out of that and the appreciation. I had to do like a really deep dive into what I'm grateful for, and what I did get to experience with her was pretty amazing. And so it brought me into this album because I began writing after my last record, and I felt like I was in this place now where I could fully celebrate her, which opened the door to like being able to write about these conversations I never got to have with her. And so the music really began just, you know, flowing out. And then I surrounded myself I was very inspired by a movie called All of Us Strangers, by Andrew Hay, and which is a very similar story in a way. And yeah, the music just started pouring out of me, and Nomadica became this kind of place where I could kind of travel to and have these imaginary conversations with my mom. So it was really unique in that way to me, like different from other albums I'd written.
Mm-hmm. The title Nomadica, traveling, where do you come by that title?
Yeah, you know, I've been nomadic in many ways, like how I deal with hard things. I feel like I'm a traveler. Some people, when they're going through something hard, it's harder to stay still and to meditate and to like be in this one place. And with trauma, I find myself constantly trying to move. And so I felt like with my mom and with this album, I needed to have this motion, this feeling of motion in order to process what I was going through. And so, and I thought about a place, what if there was this place that is Nomadica?
Okay.
Is this place where, you know, you're searching, where there's that connection that you can be with that loved one.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking that in So She Howls, your Grammy award-winning, beautiful album, people will hear some of the same lush sounds because you have both the Scorcio Quartet and tonality.
Yeah, you know, the Scorcio Quartet has been such a wonderful group of women that I've been able to collaborate with. They're just, you know, they're brilliant musicians. I'm so fortunate that they carved time out for me because they're playing everywhere. And but they're not only like brilliant in the sense of technical, right? Like they are able to open themselves up and get vulnerable with me and to experience, you know, put themselves out there and experience what this album is and how it connects to them. Like Lorenza Ponce, she, you know, had lost her mother within the last, I think a few years ago. And, you know, she dove into the solos. And when she came out of that room, she had like these tears coming down her face. And you know, and it's, I mean, she really got vulnerable with it. And I think, you know, that to give that into a performance is really special, I think.
Yeah, so I got to know your work through Martha Mook, who was on this podcast. And actually, during that episode, you generously let us share a clip of So She Howls. And actually, I was trying to talk to you for a while, but we're both so busy.
I know.
But no, but it was great because you said, Leah, I have this new project coming out. Why don't we wait? So this was fortuitous, actually.
I mean, I'm so happy and I'm, you know, that we were able to do this. And I was really excited to talk to you about this album, you know, because I think for me, it's a real growth. And it's also just something I'm excited to share. You know, people, we struggle with grief, you know, everybody loses someone so close to them. And, you know, if I can offer something that is connecting, you know, or just you feel that music connection with something, that's, I think, one of, you know, why music's so powerful. You know, even if we feel isolated, we could feel isolated together. And, but, you know, Martha Mook there, she is just, wow. She's extraordinary. I, you know, met her in a composing. BMI did a workshop for film scoring years ago, and we just hit it off. And I just had this feeling like, oh, I really want to like do something with her. And we're actually collaborating on another piece right now too. So it's very exciting. Yeah.
Yeah, that is. You know, I was thinking about losing people close to us. And, you know, I lost my mom a number of years ago, and it was a fairly traumatic situation, but it was not an accident. It was still, but I know several people personally who've lost their parents in car accidents. It's such a shock.
Yes.
Your mom, you'd had dinner with your mom, right?
Yeah. So it was such a, so my mom had come over to my house. We had had this wonderful dinner. You know, I had just moved back to the Springfield area as a home base while I went on tour. and we just had this beautiful like dinner, and her house was about 15 minutes from me. And, you know, she just left that night, and that was it. And, you know, there was so much, because it's very unclear how the accident happened. There's, you know, it was kind of a freak accident in the sense that, like, you know, there was a police officer, she was blinded by the lights, he was hidden, you know, given tickets, and accidentally ran her off the road, and nobody, it was just like this real weird, bizarre thing. And I think because I never got the answers to that of exactly what happened, you know, the police department kind of covered their tracks. So it was just like, I didn't get that closure. So I kind of had to shift that energy into, well, this was an accident, you know, regardless of what happened, it was an accident. And I had to just accept that and, you know, eventually like forgive that person if they did do that for what happened, because it was an accident. And there was a lot of that, I think. But, you know, I was also in my like early 20s at the time, and I had at that time converted the emotions, or musically what I was doing was I was very angsty. I was very angry. And that really came out in my music. And I kind of went down this really dark path for a while where, you know, I was just at the point, I wasn't even singing anymore on stage. I was just screaming, and I had blaring guitars. It was very different music. It was, you know, I was just trying to get that out, you know, and I think, you know, looking back, I was trying to heal.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Do you find you speak to your mom like daily? Is she in your head a little bit?
She is. And that really didn't happen until I was going through cancer. You know, when I was going through cancer, you know, it was like, I kind of regained this sense of like, you know, everything else around me was like secondary. And I was just like, so in my head, like with what's going to happen next, what's going, you know, what is my diagnosis, dealing with that, what's going to happen. And there was somehow, I just began like remembering these moments with her. In particular, when I was going through radiation, that process of being in a machine, you know, when you're about to go through radiation, you know, you're in this room with different people who are about to have radiation with you, and you start to talk and build this community. You know, it's kind of beautiful looking back at it, in the sense that we all just connected and had these deep connections with each other pretty instantly. And it reminded me of the moments that I was at my mom's hair salon. She was a hairdresser, and how we would sit around and have these like beautiful conversations. And, you know, there was something weird about how that felt like the same in a way. Like, so, and then when I would go into the radiation room, just by chance, the technicians, they would be playing music that I was hearing when growing up in the hair salon. So it kind of like, it made me feel this connection to my mom there. And it was almost like this portal of like thinking about those fun moments with my mom in the hair salon and kind of escaping the reality a little bit of where I actually was. And I really like began to feel her around. I could hear her thoughts almost as I was going through things. And in particular with this album, there was, you know, I just really felt her presence. I felt like, you know, my mom wasn't a trained singer, but she sang. She grew up in a very small town in Italy. And she would sing all the time. So I could feel that energy. It's really strange because I'm not like a real religious person or anything. So it was like this spiritual thing that I hadn't really experienced in a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm. Was your mom the kind of hairdresser that people opened up to in the chair?
Yeah. Yeah. And her salon, it was so cute. She ran it with my godmother and she ran it for up until the day she died, 25 years. She was very young when she got into it. And people would just come in and share their stories. You know, we're Italian, so my mom would always have like a little pizza or little things around, and everyone would just hang out and get their hair done and get, you know, dolled up to go somewhere. And it was a really warm place.
Do you want to talk about tonality? I mean, they're an integral part of the album. Yeah. and Alexander Lloyd Blake, their musical director.
Yes. Tonality, you know, I stumbled upon them here in LA. They've been doing a lot of film work. And I just always, you know, they put on these fabulous events where they really go deep in their concepts. And it's really about connecting and people, community coming together, you know, people having the space to show themselves to people and to express themselves. Or sometimes they feel unheard and they get this up like space to really just share their story with people. And I think it's really moving. Their concerts are incredible. They're intimate, but like very, you feel like you're a part of the performance in that sense. With Alex, I just wanted that connection, the human voice connection in this. And whenever they come into my studio, it's a super magical moment for me because you have about just like a little 12-piece choir, but to have all those voices together in this small, intimate space, and especially after the ideas have been there for a while and I have MIDI choir on stuff, it's just to hear it come to life. And they bring it to this new level, and it's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have to say, the name of your studio, The Soundry, what a great studio name.
Well, thank you. I just, you know, it's funny. I try to like say we're making sound and open that to beyond music, to things that even just translate to music. So, yeah. Thank you.
So the final track, co-written and performed with Martha Wainwright, I was curious if you knew her personally before this project.
I did not. But I, many years ago in New York, I did a performance with Sandra Bernhard, Rufus Wainwright and Liza Minnelli. And it was this really fun show where, you know, it was really Sandra's show, but she invited guests to come and perform. And that evening, we did a tribute to Kate McGarrigle, Rufus Wainwright's mom. And I thought it was just like a real beautiful performance. Like I was just really like, I don't know, when I say beautiful performance, I'm not talking about myself in it. I'm talking about Rufus and Sandra. You know, I was playing the piano and just kind of like watching that tribute happen. And I was really moved by it. And, you know, years later, you know, now I've been like, you know, I was thinking I would love to have this tribute to my mom, you know, come full circle with Martha, you know, and I had loved Martha's music throughout the years, and her voice has just, I mean, it's so unique. And I mean, it's up there, like, you know, it's my favorite voices. And I thought, you know what, let me just reach out to her and see if this is something she would be interested in. And we immediately connected with the mom thing, you know? And so she's also like, I think close to the age of my mom when she passed. So I thought it would be this like beautiful thing of like this kind of duet together. And so it's mainly Martha on the track, but I join her in little bits. Yeah, it was a really incredible experience in the studio with her. She's just, I don't want to be cheesy, but it's like, it's just magic. You know, when she gets behind that microphone, it's just like, wow, like there's so much there, you know?
Art of this album. Do you want to explain a little bit?
Yeah. Well, first of all, like the cover was designed by a good friend of mine, Jamie Dwyer, and my niece Olivia actually also painted part of the Nomadica world, which I was really excited because now we have like three generations of my family on this record. So. But yeah, I mean, Jamie and I, you know, he's worked on all my, you know, my album covers, and we spoke about what Nomadica meant, like the, traveling, what's this world look like? I think it's darker than like my last record, but there's also something like that's beautiful in this Nomadica world. And that's like where those lighter tones, the pink and, you know, so we try to do this combination of the two, you know, the dark contrast with that. And, you know, and I'm like, you know, the world is inside me, like, you know, it's like part of my body. So yeah, that's where that came out of.
Yeah, it's great to see an album cover and have it pique your interest, you know.
Oh, cool. I'm glad you like it.
So you mentioned your mom's was Italian, and I know that you grew up singing some Italian songs, and your grandmother had actually asked you to record her.
Yeah, my grandmother, she was so sweet and great. She used to love to sing. So the town that my family's from is in it's a region in Italy called Campobasso. It's like kind of like middle of nowhere farmland. And within that, there is a small, small town called Pitti, and the population's like 20. It's like a road. And that's where my grandmother is from and my mom. And being so small, like they have these like traditions, like these traditional songs they sing on the farm. And these like It's she wanted me to learn these songs because she was afraid they'd get lost, you know, I think in a way she wanted to preserve them. And so she would sing them to me, and this is what she knew too. So she would sing them, and she would say, you know, we would have these tape recorders. She's like, yeah, record me singing this. I want you to have this, you know, when I die, I want you to remember me, but also to remember these songs. And this is where we come from. So that was always really, that stuck with me. I think about that now when I record, you know, what am I preserving? This is something that's going to stay and be shared long after I'm gone, hopefully.
Used any of those recordings of your grandmother singing in your work, like directly?
I've got like a few tapes. I've been trying to preserve them, and sometimes I'll bring them in. I didn't use them on Nomadica, but on So She Howls, I had like a little snippet that I slowed down of stuff. And I did use actually a clip of my mom in Nomadica on the last track. It was something I found on a VHS recording. And it's just this message that she was saying, you know, like, it was like, I think a communion or like, you know, I grew up Catholic. So it was this event where, you know, she was just saying, I love you very much, you know, and I was able to piece it together. So, I really wanted to keep her voice, include her voice like that on it. Just something that could also, I mean, you know, for me, when I hear it, it's really special because when I hear her voice, it's special, you know, I hope like, you know, if someone listening to it, they can feel that or some part of that or think about someone they've lost and their voice.
Yeah. I was thinking how, you know, of course it was before we had phones recording our lives, and it's so precious just to have a little snippet like that.
A little something, yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking, someone was telling me about some app they use with a friend of theirs to communicate. It's like video chatting, but the message disappears afterwards. And I thought, why would you want that to happen?
Yeah, I know. You know, that's like the world we're living in now. It's like now everyone wants everything to go away.
So in terms of your Italian heritage, you've made several trips to Italy.
I've gone like, you know, it was really important for my family to, they, you know, all my cousins are pretty much there, and they really wanted me to, you know, see my aunts and uncles and have that, because I think when you immigrate to a new country, you're kind of, you don't know as many people. And so we definitely like felt that, you know, like we had like a couple cousins in the States, but you know, I do feel this like great connection with my relatives out there. So I try to go visit and keep that going.
In terms of, you mentioned you grew up Catholic. Did you sing like in a choir growing up? Was that part of your musical?
You know, I would say like the first up until like about 11, I went to Catholic school. And then thankfully I was excited I got to go to public school. Though I was sad to leave my friends at the time, but there was a music class there that I really loved. It wasn't a choir. It was this man named Mr. Mastriani, who would basically come into class and sing to us. It was really adorable when I look back at it now. And he would just kind of get us to sing with him these songs. So it wasn't like full on choir, but it was really cute. And I loved it though. I loved music class, and I liked he would play the piano, and I was very intrigued by the piano playing. My parents got me this toy piano when I was a kid. Actually, it was my grandmother got it for me. But anyways, I would sing with them, and I learned to clunk out. I was just, you know, they put it there thinking I'd play with it. But like, I really got into it. I was like, this is my instrument. And I would like clunk out like little melodies. I feel like from that early age, from, you know, what I can remember is that I just wanted to write things. I wasn't really trying to play other music. And, you know, by the time I got to 11 or 12, I was like, oh, I just want to write. I want to write an album. And I was about 12 when I put out my first demo. And I just went to this local little studio this guy had in his basement. And I had written 3 songs. And I recorded myself on keyboard and tape. And I mean, keyboard and vocals. And it was just like fun. I made my own artwork. It's like all sketched out and it's a handwritten like tape cassette. And I was like, this is what I want to do. And then like by the age of 16, I did my first full-length album, and learning instruments was like, I needed to learn these instruments so I could play what I wrote. but writing was always the fundamental part, like the part that I enjoyed the most.
So I was curious, you went to Berkeley. So at what point did that happen and how did it help you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, my parents having come, you know, to the States, you know, they were all into the American dream and they wanted me to go to college. They were like, we don't really care what you study, but you have to be the first of us to go to college. That was very important. And so, yeah, I was like, well, there's Berkeley and Boston. It's not that far. And they were like, okay, well, why don't you apply, see if you get in? And I was really excited. I applied to like 2 schools and I was really excited to go there. I think, first of all, it just showed that my parents were supporting what I love and they, you know, were like, go for it. They believed in me. And then I also was just like excited to finally study something that I really love. So I, you know, I ended up going and I it was a really great experience. Yeah.
Did you study film scoring there or what was your major?
No, I actually studied songwriting. I was like, Mom, my major is going to be songwriting. And that kind of was like scary, I think. I did a lot of performance stuff in songwriting at the time. You know, it's wonderful how many people that go to that school are from out of the U.S., you know, outside the U.S. So I met so many people from all over the world, learned a lot just about different cultures. It was really a great, great melting pot, I think, for music.
And your early career, you were performing, like it was more of a touring life.
Yeah.
Was that people you met at school?
Some. I met a lot of people when I got to New York soon after. Because, you know, everyone kind of disperses after I did graduate. Not a lot of people stay through all of Berkeley, but I did. And, you know, I went to New York and that's when I started to meet other people in the area and really kind of discover what my sound, what is this? What do I want to do? And I formed this project, this band called White Widow. It's really like angsty rock. And I started meeting really great musicians and convinced them to go on the road with me.
Yeah. You'd mentioned Sandra Bernhardt earlier with it, because of the Rufus Wainwright connection. But you toured as her music director, or was it just in New York?
Yeah. So funny enough, you know, I grew up watching Sandra Bernhardt on the old Roseanne show. And, mm-hmm. And, you know, and I always thought it was so cool how she brought music into her comedy in a very different way where it wasn't like slapstick comedy. It was just really deep in this way. Like, it's really cool. Anyways, how she incorporates her show, music into her show. But I was, after New York, I headed out to Austin, Texas for a bit. I met my partner and she was heading out that way and I decided to go with her. That was a big move. And it was 1 year at South by Southwest where I did a show and opened for Sandra. And it was a typical South by Southwest show. We were like in a parking lot, you know, that had a stage. And we opened for her and she really dug my band. And she was like, hey, like, do you want to come do a show in San Francisco? And, you know, but it would just be like, you know, a solo thing, you know, just accompany me on a couple tracks. I was like, okay, yeah, sure. And we just hit it off. And I ended up touring with her for a couple years. And actually working on material with her now. She's a longtime friend. And it was a great experience. Like, it opened up my world to different venues, a different audience. You know, in a way, at the time, I was just like, I felt I was in this like one genre. And it, like, now I feel like it brought me into film in a way too, because I was supporting this other story arc that wasn't mine. So it opened even that. And like, so it was really a wonderful experience. And it brought me to LA. Yeah. Mm.
She's been, especially for someone of her generation, she's been pretty visible as a member of the LGBTQ plus community.
Yeah.
So yeah. As that must be, have been important to you at the time.
Yeah. I've been so lucky in the sense that I've had mentors that have this, you know, like, you know, Sandra Bernhard, there's a composer out here, Laura Cartman, who's fabulous, and, you know, that I've studied with. And, you know, it's important, you know, because, you know, one of the conversations for me in Nomadica was I never came out to my mom. And that was really hard. I think also just coming to the terms of, like, at the time she kind of knew and but didn't accept it was the vibe, but we never fully got to hash it out. So, yeah. Having that support, I think, from people like Sandra and being able to be myself around them, you know, I met Sandra a few years after my mom died. So being able to, you know, have had somebody like that in my life was really powerful, I think, for me to become who I am today and to accept myself, you know?
Yeah. And things have changed a lot for the better, mostly.
Yes.
Yeah. The last 20 years, maybe your mom would have had a different attitude.
I think she would have. And I think she just didn't have the time to do it. You know, we just ran out of time. And there's no hesitation. Like, I don't hesitate now to think about if she would accept my partner. I actually feel pretty strongly that she would love my partner. I just because I know who my mom was. You know, and so,
So actually, maybe we could talk about your project with Elizabeth, about Lotte Reiniger. That I saw that beautiful little film you guys made.
You know, another, like, you know, Lotte, I never got to meet her, but I feel her energy because it's just, she has shared so much. And, you know, like, not just like the films she's left behind, you know, she's left, you know, I have this wonderful book where she explains how to make a silhouette film. Like, she had so much joy in making these type of films. She really just wanted to share that with people and leave it with people. And I really, it's like my grandmother, you know, and I really connect with that. I learn more about her as I go. We're working on another project about her, you know, our short film about her, you know, being this pioneer, creating the first feature length animation a decade before Disney, inventing her and her film crew invented the multiplane camera, which later was credited and trademarked or by Disney. So I'm not like anti-Disney, but there's some things that Disney did here that kind of helped push her out of history in a way, right? So, but, you know, the way that she, like, cared about her work, I mean, she did these stop motion animation puppets, you know, made out of this type of cardboard, but, like, basically she filmed it at 24 frames per second, which is, you know, took her years to make this film, and she did it with a small crew. And I really love that it wasn't manufactured by this big company.
Hi, just a quick break from the episode. I've linked several episodes I'm sure you'll love in the show notes for you, with Anjay Roseman and Kara Talvey, Adam Blau,
Martha Mook, Emily Sankofa, J. Walter Hawks, and Kavisha Metzella. You'll also find the link to sign up for my newsletter. And the main reason for you to do so, aside from each weekly episode, is that you'll get exclusive information about upcoming guests. Finally, please support this independent project, for which I do all the many jobs and which costs me quite a bit of money personally. You can share this episode with a friend, write a review, buy some podcast merch, or buy me a coffee on my Ko-fi page, either once or every month. All these links are in the show notes. Thanks. Now, back to Carla Petullo.
So I met about maybe 7 years ago now, a man named Paul who was a close friend to her, and he shared his story with her before he passed away. So I just keep learning about these, who she was and like all these things she gave to people and how she grew through her life and the struggles she had. It's just very inspiring for me. And I think for women.
Yeah. I found that project on YouTube. Is it linked in your website? I can link it directly in the show notes.
Yeah. It might be in my Instagram and on my website, but it's called Lottie That Silhouette Girl. Yeah. It was an interesting process because we do have a couple snippets or like one main snippet of her film, Prince Ahmed, that we used. But the rest we did, we kind of, you know, Elizabeth really, she's like an architect, but also on, so she built the camera exactly like Lottie. Wow. Using the book with the instructions and all of that. Like she took her puppets and remade them. And so it was quite a process. It's a, like an 11-minute film. It took us a couple years to make.
We hear Lotta's voice on it. So this, yes. what was that from?
We came across that in the archives at USC, and we, you know, kind of went to them and explained what we were doing, and they were excited, and they were like, "Wow, you know, the whole conversation's about 45 minutes long," and we took it. We knew that we could only make an 11-minute film, and we tried to wrap it up in 11 minutes and just have it be this her telling her story, and just use that as a way to narrate it. And so, yeah, it was a very special interview, I think. I encourage people to go listen to it, actually, yeah.
So speaking of filmmaking, I mean, you do write a lot for films, and some of your songs have been used in all kinds of things. At the very beginning of this, you mentioned that a movie, All of Us Strangers, had influenced you for Nomadica.
You know, it's a really beautiful film by Andrew Hay. And I think because there's so much about it, there's like the surrealism about it, you know, like he travels. I don't want to give away too much of the film, but I've watched it like by this point, probably like at least 50 times. It's a lot. I've like, Mike, you know, really analyzed this film like inside out. And I, every time I watch it, I feel something a little different. And it really, the first time I watched it, it really, you know, packed a punch and it opened something up for me, like an emotion that I was locked in deeply. And it really inspired me to keep that open and let's what is this I'm feeling, you know? And, you know, I think art, music, films, they can unlock these doors that are shut, that are just from trauma. Like you just haven't been able to go there. For example, too, like a couple of weeks ago, I lost my uncle and I haven't really been able to grieve about it yet. And, you know, he's in Italy. So it's just, he was in Italy. So it's just like this, disbelief going on, you know? Yeah. So, but you know, film is so powerful. It just resonates. And I think that's why I'm composing a lot for it, because, I like to escape into that world of the film and really absorb it.
You have one of your tracks is called Isochronic Waves. So I did look up what that meant. So do you want to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I was really, you know, isochronic tones is something, you know, I came across these isochronic tones in music. And I began to like really experiment with these pulses. And just kind of find these frequencies that would evoke relaxation or get me into a state where I could really let myself process, you know, these heavy things without the intensity being so much that I can't open up and can't take it in. So I was really, you know, I began just playing with different, you know, tones and trying to incorporate that in a way where, you know, I recorded Martha and Scorchio. I recorded them doing this bed of sound that was, one of them was a train track setting where there's a train going by. And I asked them to improvise this pad, basically, where they would make sounds together as a quartet. And then what I did was I took some of that and I slowed it down. I love to slow things down because there's so much happening in these like vibrations that when you slow stuff down, you can catch these like beautiful like things that, you know, just go by too fast. And so and then I began adding like a tremolator to it at a certain hertz to emulate like this kind of isochronic tone to give that pulse and get us into this tone of relaxation to bring us into the track. So you hear that, you know, in different spaces where I'm getting started. Like the track Nomadica, you know, starts with these tones. I don't, you know, was trying to get people into the story and just also emulate the train tracks. That's the interesting thing with the tones and the train tracks. You kind of hear that, yeah, leading you into the tracks. Yeah.
So in your work as a film score composer, you do try to choose projects that resonate with you, like you want to emphasize inclusion for women and immigrants. And so I checked out some of your projects, like I was able to just see a little bit of like My Name is Maria de Jesus.
Yeah, that was a wonderful little film. I remember, you know, when she came with me, this was years ago with that film. I think that's something that she was a real big part of her story and things that she had experienced. And it was really important for her to get this film out. And I could feel that urgency in her. And I was really excited. I also ended up doing some sound design for that film. I was really excited to be a part of it. You know, it resonated with me, you know, and my family upbringing. So, yeah.
So did you speak Italian growing up or English with your parents?
A very broken farmer Italian, because, you know, there's so many dialects in Italy. So sometimes if I find myself in like Florence or something visiting, I'll bring out my Italian, you know, that I grew up with. And they're like, where are you from? You sound like a Southern Italian from, you know, meets like, you know, American. But you know, my grandmother mainly spoke Italian. My mom spoke English pretty well, actually. My dad's Italian was, English wasn't really well, really good. So, you know, we spoke it at home. Yeah.
I used to study Italian, and I learned enough that on a couple of trips, I was able to communicate with people. And I remember this guy we'd rented this place from, and he said, I was able to communicate with him, and he said, I'm so glad because I know English, but I hate speaking it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very beautiful language, you know, and but I always get like, I'm so impressed by all the different ways. Like, you know, years ago, I went to a place in Italy called Goro, which is another project I've been working on very slowly, but about an Italian singer out there who passed away a couple of years ago named Melva. And we went to her hometown. We got to see Melva and interview her before she passed, but we went to her small town and they spoke completely different Italian. And it was really tricky, and they thought it was cute, the dialect and the stuff that I was saying, you know, that they would say in Southern Italy. So it's really incredible, all the different dialects. Yeah.
I was wondering if, you know, your cancer, you've been 5 years cancer free. So was that sort of you got better just before the pandemic broke out, or was sort of overlapped with that as well?
Well, it's overlapped. Like, I got diagnosed right before the pandemic. and then I began my treatment, like, and basically the beginning of the year of 2020, wow. Right before COVID. And yeah, I mean, it was just crazy. You know, I had HER2 positive breast cancer, which is, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's a type of, there's so many types of breast cancer. I learned pretty quickly. They caught mine relatively early, but I had to do a really, you know, I had to do the chemo, I had to do the surgery, I had to do the radiation, I had to do the post medicine. And that's the thing with HER2 positive. 30 years ago, that was a very, very deadly cancer. It's a fast growing cancer. But then a doctor from UCLA here created this drug called Herceptin, which really changed it. And these women did this experimental trial, and basically I took that medicine, and it was like a miracle drug for me and many people. It's changed the outcome. I mean, it's a long road, you know, you're going to be on medicine for a couple years, and I still continue to take, you know, hormone blockers and stuff like that. But it's a road, at least it's a path to overcome it. And, yeah, it was a journey, you know. You know, I won't go too much into healthcare in this country, you know, but it was a journey just trying to, you really have to advocate, you know, for your health and for, you know, when it comes to dealing with insurance and stuff like that. It's very hard.
Well, you were relatively young. I was wondering if you connected with other patients in a similar age group.
I did, which is really, I think it's very common. I think that there's what we're eating, how we're living. We have a lot of toxic stuff. No one in my family had breast cancer. So this was a big wake-up call to me. Like, what am I doing? I call myself Carla 2.0 now because I made a drastic change in the food I eat. I no longer have alcohol. I don't do the occasional smoke. None of that. I'm very, really watch the food I eat and what fresh vegetables, all that stuff. Where is this coming from? It takes a lot of energy and money, you know, to eat healthy in this country.
What other self-care things have changed since that time?
Well, I've started boxing. That has been a great sport for me, being active. The thing that I fell into with my work and how my work was toxic was the long hours, the not prioritizing my health. And the thing that I noticed that wasn't good for my work and my health was pushing myself to do things when my body was saying no. You know, like I now am on a schedule where I leave my studio and I go for my long walks. I go to the gym. Even if I have a crazy deadline at the end of the week, I do it. And you know what? I come back to the studio much better shape to write, much better shape to get the job done. And I sleep. That was a thing that I would like not allow myself to do when I had a crazy deadline, and I do it. And, you know, things have shifted into, you know, what really is important. You know, I think it's so easy to get caught up in this like work, and this ladder of like reaching this with your, you know, to me, it's like, I just want to put out good work. And in order to put out good work, my body needs to be in a good place. If you don't have your health, you can't really do much, right?
So do you feel very different with Carla 2.0?
Yeah. I have so much more energy. I have so much more energy. I feel like I'm more more creative in this way. Like I just, I'm better with my boundaries. You know, it's something where like just all around in my life. Cause when I was sick, I'd be like, oh, I don't have the energy to do that. And I would say it to people and they'd be like, oh yeah, of course you're going through chemo. But now it's like, well, I don't have the energy to do that because I'm overworked, you know, and I need this space for myself. This like grace of giving my body, you know, to live day to day.
Yeah. Yeah, that definitely resonates with me. Well, you have some of the beautiful titles. I just wanted to talk to some of the titles if we're going to include clips like Below the Surface.
Yeah, Below the Surface is just, you know, I really kind of coming out of, it's like, you know, I imagine this whole album of like going into Nomadica, traveling around it, and then kind of coming out of it on another side. And that's what Below the Surface is. It's kind of like emerging, you know, and as I was coming out of that and going into the track Fly Under, I felt like this was like a goodbye, but like also I'm carrying, you know, these memories and this experience with me wherever I go. Yeah.
Maybe we could just talk, like you have a new project. I don't know if it's completed yet, a new musical with Corey Hinkle, The Hurricane. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. We've been crafting this one for about 7 years now. And of course, other projects, as you know, have come in and out too. But this is a story about grief, again, about about a hurricane that happened in Texas years ago. And it's kind of a fictional story based on that. But, you know, it's dealing with the trauma of a sudden loss. So I was really able to connect with it in this way. You know, one of the characters loses somebody very close to her. And we kind of go into this kind of world, like this surreal world of, like, you know, her finding her way out of it. So in many ways, I think Nomadica is actually, now that I'm talking to you about it, inspired by it. But, you know, what I love about musical theater is that it's live and you experience it, you know, with different musicians, different actors, and you see it in different ways, or just different performances are different. So it's, you know, and the music is kind of like based, like, I lived in Austin, so I incorporate a lot of the sounds I was hearing when I was out in Austin and in Texas. And so it's really fun because one of my favorite singers of all time is Aretha Franklin, which I get to get very a cappella and like spiritual with this. And I feel like I'm able to reference her, incorporate some of the ways she's inspired me musically into it. We're hoping to release an album of it maybe next year. Our fingers are crossed.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, so many of these projects have long arcs. Yeah. And I know with So She Howls, you actually did some live performances quite a bit after it came out.
Good. You know, that, you know, I love Martha Mook, because, you know, always doing stuff. It's so amazing how she keeps her performances going. And she was like, hey, let's do this show, let's do that. And I'm like, okay. And so we just, like, you know, one of the things of coming out of cancer was, what can I do with, you know, I've had some changes in my voice. I was still kind of fresh out of this, still feeling side effects. I finished a medicine right after the recording of So She Howls, but I had like really bad side effects of, like, you know, the fatigue was insane. But I was like, what do I have the energy to do? And I really felt like I was learning to ride a horse again or something. You know what I mean? Just get back to it. And, you know, it's been really wonderful to have Martha, because she encourages and she has these great ideas. And she's like, you know, hey, let's do that show. Let's go. And so I love it. I'm finding myself back to the stage, and I'm really excited about it.
Yeah. I mean, the life of a film composer can be a bit lonely, I think, right?
Very lonely. Although I'm starting a new film project, and I was invited out to set, and that was an incredible experience. But usually, yeah, I'm in my studio, just kind of, you know, sitting here playing with stuff. And then I'm like, oh, time to go out in the real world and get some lunch or something. It's very isolating. But performing to me is like, you know, the first time I performed after this whole experience, I felt like it was like a form of meditation. It was like this beautiful way of, again, like being in the moment and, like, you know, just being present on stage. That is so powerful. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe to wrap this up, you know, you won this Grammy for So She Howls. How did it change your career at all? Is it easier to make your own decisions?
You know, in a way, like, I mean, there were two things that happened at the same time. It was like, yeah, I, you know, I was overcoming the cancer part, and then winning the Grammy was just like unbelievable, because, you know, here I am thinking, I mean, I also was just film composing, not thinking I was going to have like a solo career again or whatever. So there's just like so many unbelievable things that were happening. So that whole, like, you know, wow, I can do anything, kind of, I feel like I can go for it. Like, why not? It is still with me. Like, I carry that with me. It's like, why not? I think you're waiting for something, or it's like, no, it's here. Like, let's go. And I tell like my nieces and, you know, aspiring people, like, why not? If I can do it, you can do it. You just have to really appreciate life in a way, you know, like if you realize and really think about it, like you're only here for a certain amount of time and you got to live in this now. You got to, who cares if you fail? You have your health, you know, if you have your health and you are able, or even if you don't have your health and you're healing from something, like go for it. That's the biggest takeaway. Sure. Like, I think there's some doors that have opened and people are now like, oh, I'll look at your music. I'll check out your music. In the film community, more people have heard of me now and they want me to score their work. So it has helped in that sense of opening doors. I think, though, for me, it's always going to be about the fact that of what I went through and just saying, like, I could, you know, go from this really horrible place to this really great place. And that transformation, you know, hopefully if something like this happens again, or, which I'm sure it will, because it's life, right? That I can do it, you know, I can do it and I can try. And the process of going from one place to that other place was actually quite beautiful.
You know, Carla, I was thinking about young Carla. You were talking about making your first demo. She wouldn't have been surprised, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's this thing when you're a kid, right? You just like, you're like, I'm going to go for this. So sometimes you get beaten up along the way, you know, with the rejection and the other things in life that weigh you down. So it's hard to hold on to that thing that you had as a kid. This is, I think, something that came out of cancer, you know, just being able to have that. Everything's possible, like, again. Yeah.
Your writing in this Nomadica album is so lush and orchestral. I'm an orchestra musician. It's my full-time job. I was curious, have you written for orchestra? Like, you know, down that direction?
That's something I've been getting into, like, over, you know, after I got off the road with Sandra, I did go to do a program at Berkeley for their film scoring. And it was like a real crash course in the orchestra. I was pretty intimidated. But then, like, you know, I did my first project and they make you conduct it, which was like, I was also mortified to do that. But when you get up there and there's this room of amazing musicians playing your music and it just all comes to life. And it's just, I was just like, I loved it. I loved it. And I also love when I'm learning. I love to learn. And I feel like orchestral, you know, working with, you know, orchestras, there's so much to learn about every instrument. And I love that. And I love continuing to do that and bringing that into my scores, as much as possible, you know, when, especially like an orchestra, when there's a budget, right?
So thanks so much for this today, Carla. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. It's really been fun.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please share this with your friends and check out episodes you may have missed at leahroseman.com. If you could buy me a coffee to support the series, that would be wonderful. I'm an independent podcaster and I really do need the help of my listeners. All the links are in the show notes. The podcast theme music was written by Nick Cold. Have a wonderful week.